Ghostbusting sales and business development director. That's what I want to be.
Ghostbusting sales and business developer director. Can I do director. Marketing and advertising?
You could do marketing and advertising.
Jingles. I'll do jingles.
Yes. I will set up the territories within the U.S. and.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is. Or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
Some random art. So I want to start off with beef.
You're going to start off with beef.
Beef is our newest segment in our stellar lineup of segments.
And we would like to talk about beef because once you love, you will always love.
Yes.
Once you have beef.
Sadly.
You're going to have beef until you...
You're going to have beef forever.
Until you resolve it.
Beef is eternal. Beef is eternal.
Beef and love.
Yeah.
Eternal.
So this is some high-class beef.
Okay.
This is Michelangelo Caravaggio and Giovanni Baglioni. So they're... Michelangelo Caravaggio, I will just call him Caravaggio at this point, was an extremely famous painter.
Yes.
During the 1600s. And he was known for a... I'm going to mispronounce this... Chiaroscuro is an effect where you really do a lot of contrast on light and dark in a painting. So that was like his thing. It's kind of interesting now to think about back in the day. They were like, ooh, high contrast.
Yeah.
He's crazy.
Light and dark?
Light and dark.
Together.
Like and- that? So he was known as a badass. He was an artist, but he used to stalk the streets of Rome and he carried a piece, in this case a sword, with him at all times. Okay. And he was just getting it on with people wherever he went. And he had a famous feud with a rival painter, Giovanni Baglioni. Giovanni Baglioni was also an art critic. And he did some painting, but he went on later to write over 200 biographies of famous artists during that time and the time before him. Mm-hmm. And he's most known for that. He was like a very serious writer. So the disagreement began when Baglioni... So Caravaggio used his technique to paint a painting, one of his masterworks. Baglioni looked at it and was like, I can do one better. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to up this.
Oh, no.
I'm going to up the light and dark. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to heighten everything about it. So he goes on to paint his.
The light is going to be lighter. The dark is going to be darker.
It's going to be much darker.
Yeah.
So Caravaggio, of course, finds out about this. And, well, okay. So Caravaggio found out about this, and he's rolling with a crew of artists at this time who are, like, pretty badass. And they're like, we don't like this. Mm-hmm. What's going on? So then Baglioni was like, no, it's not plagiarism. I was just playing around with the technique and showing how I could do my painting better than your painting. So then, not to be outdone, Baglioni then says, I'll do it again. So the painting was with a scene that had the devil in it.
Oh, okay.
So it was like an allegorical thing. So when Baglioni redid the painting the second time, he put Caravaggio's face on Satan.
Oh.
Thereby making a comment about who he was.
Yes.
So Caravaggio couldn't let this go. He then penned a series of vulgar and highly offensive poems about Baglioni.
Okay.
And started putting those around. Yep. So then, you know, imagine everyone's in the streets at the time saying these poems about this guy and going back and forth. So Baglioni got really upset about this and then took Caravaggio to court on libel charges. Mm-hmm. And he was in jail for 2 weeks.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Jails.
And then
it's not comfortable.
Later on, Baglioni wrote a biography of Caravaggio that doesn't make him look really good at all. And actually, you know, it says he died miserably as he lived. So I wanted to look into this beef a little bit more because I was like, what's the, you know, there's rivalries going on. Like, what's the big deal? Like, why is this such a big thing? So I looked at the history of both of them. So Caravaggio had a really sad past. He was orphaned as a young boy by the Black Death.
Oh.
So he lost his entire family.
Oh my God.
And from that moment in his life, everything was just like up and down, up and down, up and down. So at 11 years old, his whole family is dead. At 11 years old, he goes to, I think it was Milan. Yeah, he goes to Milan and he starts hustling himself around as a painter assistant.
Okay.
He's like a little boy, but he's going around to painting workshops and he's like, you know, I'll clean brushes. I want to learn this kind of stuff. So he gets himself out there. He's all on his own. Turns out he's like a genius.
Oh, my God.
And so then he starts painting. But he unfortunately falls into a group of painters who are kind of like the brigands.
Like rough trade painters.
Rough trade. So they're painters and swordsmen who hung out together. And their motto was next bay.
Paint or slash.
Next bay, nec matu, which means without hope, without fear.
Ooh.
So this is like an angry group of like bad at, they're lovers and fighters and painters. Yeah. They're everything. Italy must have been something back in the day. I mean, it just sounds crazy. But I mean, no matter what kind of good jobs he got, he always self-sabotaged.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was his thing. You know, he was his life was tragic. And so he continued that kind of tragedy throughout. He became very prolific. He used to paint. His work is known for painting a lot of pretty young, chubby boys with no clothing on.
Oh, it's
so you
his,
know where
it's
they,
his thing.
That's his thing.
All right.
And they're saying that he had an assistant at one point, and they think that they may have been involved with each other.
Oh, okay.
He used to paint huge, like, religious scenes. So people would commission him, like very wealthy people or churches, to paint scenes from the Bible or scenes from saints' lives.
I've got to tell you, I like when those dramatic paintings from the Bible. I'm not religious, but I like
yeah.
the paintings.
Well, you would like this guy's stuff because he put prostitutes in them. He put people doing rude shit. He once did, they asked him to do a scene of the resurrection.
Are you trying to say that's what I look for in a
no,
painting?
But
prostitution
you're like fun,
and rude shit.
Like fun stuff. You know what I mean? Like graphic representations.
Yeah, people living life.
Yeah, people living life. Yeah. Beggars, thieves, like he would put them in these biblical scenes, okay. Which is probably not incorrect because a lot of, you know, during biblical times, things were pretty mm-hmm. rough. But he also, they commissioned him to paint an image of Jesus' resurrection. And so he painted a really graphic picture of Jesus escaping the middle of the night from the tomb, mm-hmm. like a thief in the night.
Yeah.
So he would do stuff that was kind of like pushing the envelope a little bit. At one point, he started attacking people. He was in prison for a little while. He had a bunch of assaults. He once threw artichokes at a waiter.
Okay.
He once attacked Roman guards with stones. And they're saying he would just stagger around from like noon until night drunk with his peace out,
ooh.
Challenging people.
Yeah, get a load of this.
So he was pretty badass. Unfortunately, he did kill somebody.
Oh.
And then he bolted. So he tried to run away. He bolted to Malta. He lived with the Knights of Malta. He was painting for them. And then somebody was like, hey, it's that murderer. While he was there, he also threatened a priest.
Oh.
So, and this is telling you something about priests back in the day. So he threatened this priest. He like tried to stab the guy. It didn't work. He fled. The priest was like, I'm not done with you.
Mm-hmm.
Priest caught up with him, chased him from Malta, chased him to Italy, had a confrontation with him. And then finally, at the end of it, the priest found him outside of a tavern and slashed his face.
Oh.
And was like, now we're good. And then what? Wow. And then what about his business? He died under mysterious circumstances. He
not
was trying
from the
to,
knife wound to his
not
face.
Not from the knife, but he was trying to get up while he was running from the priest. He was on his way to the Pope because the Pope liked his work, and he was trying to get a pardon from the Pope.
Wait, from after he got his face slashed, he ran right to the Pope.
No, as he this was on his way
oh.
to he was on the run.
Oh, okay.
To try to get to the Pope to get a pardon for killing this guy.
Oh, okay.
Not thinking of the fact that he was a fugitive.
Yeah.
So, like, you already have done work. Like, you killed someone and yeah. now you're on the run. These are mm-hmm. two really bad things. So, they're saying in the end, they don't know how he died. But when they exhumed his body, they found really high levels of lead. Which is the same thing a lot of painters suffered from, was lead poisoning from the paint.
Yeah. Cause
from the work.
Yeah.
And it also causes you to go a little bit screwy.
Just, yeah.
You can't make good decisions.
Yeah.
You know, your brain doesn't work the same way. So the other guy was like came from a really nice background, was obsessed with status. He's an art historian and a painter. And the reason why, so it's, as far as Caravaggio was concerned, Baglioni was mocking his painting.
Mm-hmm.
But what he didn't know is that there were two brothers who had hired one each to paint the same paintings.
Oh.
So these were two very rich brothers who were like, I'm going to have my guy paint this amazing painting. And he was like, well, I'm going to have my guy paint an even better painting. So it was the rivalry between these two brothers, which was friendly,
mm-hmm.
that generated this rivalry between Baglioni and Caravaggio.
Oh my God, all this beef.
Beef. So that is my Italian seasoned beef from Caravaggio and Baglioni. If there's anyone who's an art historian in there who happened to be listening to that and found that some of my things were not correct, I did the best I could because it's a twisted tale.
It is a twisted tale.
And
I think you did it very well.
Thank
and
you.
I have to give you credit for that.
I will accept that credit. I have a beef credit of two. Beef credit two. Advantage beef. Hmm. All right, what do you have?
I have advice on advice.
Oh, cool. So advice on advice is a segment where we find advice on the internet that stinks.
And it's unqualified.
And we want to improve upon it by giving our advice on advice. Hence,
advice on advice.
Advice on advice. So who's this from?
No, I don't know, but I tell you.
It's salacious.
Yes. Okay. Oh, it's pretty. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, for sure it's pretty.
It's beef-tastic.
Yes. So, dear Prudence. Okay. I have been with my wonderful wife for over 7 years.
Uh-oh.
She always had a bit of facial hair on her upper lip.
Oh.
Think a little peach fuzz, but a bit darker.
A stash.
Yeah.
Okay.
This never bothered me, and honestly, I don't even notice it usually.
Uh-oh.
Recently, though, it has gotten darker and fuller.
It's coming in nicely.
You think she's from Brooklyn.
It's coming
into a neck beard pretty soon.
Yes.
At best, it distracts me, and at other times, it becomes somewhat of a turnoff. I'm not sure.
Wait, what does he be like? He's just doing something regular, like the washing up in the corner of his eye. He just sees it, that caterpillar.
Like, oh, look at that over there.
Look at that. I'm not sure.
Mustache. I'm not sure why this has changed. Maybe change in medications, natural process, etc.
Yes, it could. And medication mm-hmm. does bring on darker hair, but also just getting older.
Right. But I'm torn if I should say anything. I don't want to upset her or have her think I'm not attracted to her. I am, but I also don't love the idea of this staring back.
I cannot. I have to say I am not a body fascist. I really don't care what people look like. But a stash is just one of those things. I'm like, either have it or don't have it. There's nothing worse than just a little. Yeah. If she's going to have a mustache, she needs to go Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Or forget it.
Yeah. She has some issues with self-confidence and generally accepting suggestions, something that we're both getting help with and improving. Any suggestion...
Please read that part again.
She has some issues with self-confidence and generally accepting suggestions. And
Okay. So she can't take criticism.
Yeah.
Okay. She's fragile in that way. Okay. Yeah.
And so that they're both getting help with. So maybe...
He's like, bitch, you gotta wax that stash.
Yeah. Any suggestion on supportive diplomatic way to bring this up, or should I focus more on working on looking past it?
Okay. I mean, before you go into the advice, I might handle this, but I don't know, because, like, with my friends, if I'm having a little bit of a stash, which I don't yet, but if my friends do, I'm like, yo, you got something going on. But in a husband-wife situation, maybe the best thing for him to do might be to send her to a spa.
Yeah.
And mention to the esthetician sometimes, and they will tell you, would you like me to, you know, like if you're getting an eyebrow wax, I've heard them say, well, would you like me also to do the lip?
Yeah.
The chin. The chin. That lets you know that, you know, you have something going on.
You are seen.
Yes. And if you don't mind rocking a little bit of a stash, that's fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I think it's, I always check because it's something I'm like paranoid about. And I think it creeps up on you.
Yeah.
Like, one day is nothing there, the next day, Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, it does.
Tom Selleck. Okay. So how would you handle it?
How would I handle it?
If you were the husband, what would you say?
If I were the husband.
You'd be like, girl, you know it's true. You got a stash.
Oh, God. I would probably do something the way that you suggested.
Yeah, like get somebody else, get an esthetician to approach it.
Or start talking about my own body problems. And to be like, what do you think your body problems are?
That's not subtle at all. Okay. You'd be divorced.
Yeah.
I'd be out $200. You'd come back with a stash.
Yeah. Like, oh.
You know, she's like, I spent all the money on a pedicure. It's like, really? Yeah. You didn't see the wax person at all?
Not at all.
You didn't see Hilda at all?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is a...
All right. This letter felt fairly supportive and diplomatic, actually. You love your wife, and you're not an obsessive perfectionist who has made a habit of asking her to change the distribution of her hair on her body. But you recently noticed a change in the hair over her upper lip and wonder if she's considering waxing, bleaching, threading, removing it.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, threading a lip sounds painful.
Yeah, it sounds awful. Oh, and by the way, I'll tell you about a threading story.
What's a threading nightmare?
Well, they usually put the thread in their mouth.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Some people put the thread.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah, and she was putting a thread in, and what are you doing? You feed the thread through your fingers.
Yeah.
And then she also like pulled it with her teeth in her mouth and kept pulling it.
I've never seen that before in my life.
I was like, horrified.
Was this an Indian place?
Yes.
That's highly unusual.
Yeah.
I've been to many Indian threading salons, and I found the level of cleanliness to be above and beyond what I've seen in a lot of places.
This lady had it in her mouth, and I was like,
she was keeping it real.
I'm like, wow, this is something
if you
I
need
like.
To wet it, that's fine, but I don't think you do.
No. She was doing it as like a third arm, like pulling.
No, no.
Yeah. Boom. Okay. You know your wife better than I do and presumably know how she feels about unsolicited comments about something she might not have noticed.
Mm-hmm. Like her thick stash.
Yeah. I want to know if I developed a slight mustache, others might not. Still, others might not care in the least. There's no way to dress this request up as some sort of compliment.
You got a fine stash there.
Except that you're asking her to do something that will make her feel at least a bit self-conscious. But you can still be kind, respectful, and keep things in perspective while making your request. If she's particularly lacking in confidence right now, I'd hold off on the conversation until she's regained some of her self-assurance, especially since it's a fairly cosmetic issue. But if you're going to do it, keep your tone neutral and make it clear that this is not some weighty issue that you've been holding back for ages.
Yeah, this is hard, though, because sometimes it's like telling someone that their breath is bad. There's mm-hmm. almost no way to do it that won't offend that person.
Yeah. It's relatively small in the grand scheme of things, and if she doesn't want to get rid of the hair, drop it. You can make the request, but you can't insist. Time and encroaching body hair will come for all of us.
Yeah, and so will waxing.
Yeah.
Like, when encroaching body hair comes, you go to waxing.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a weird... Yeah. Like I say, a mustache is one of those things I'm like, have it or don't have mm-hmm. it. I don't know. It's my personal preference to not have one.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I
that's
go with
mine
it.
Too.
Yeah. I don't think it looks good on me.
Yeah.
I don't have any, but I can't imagine... And if I... Because, you know, I like to wear a beard or mustache when I'm doing, like, comedy stuff.
Yeah.
But it's full on.
Yeah. And it's something you can take
and
off.
Something
and you
I
know
can
it's
take
there.
Off and I know it's there.
And you know what it looks like.
I don't want to be surprised by it. So I have a tale from Der Campfire.
Tale from Der Campfire.
This is a segment where we go on the internet and we find tales of the paranormal.
Ghost stories.
Fake lore.
Folklore.
And we retell
legends.
Them. Around here. What? Who? And urban legends.
And urban.
And we retell them here around the digital campfire. So please gather around. So this is about Joseph Bonaparte and the Jersey Devil.
Ooh.
So you all know about Joe Bonaparte. He's the former King of Spain, brother of Napoleon. He couldn't keep England out during the Peninsular Wars, so they kicked him off his throne.
Okay.
And so what do? When you lose the throne, you come to New Jersey and you live in Bordentown. Do you know Bordentown?
No, this is another one of these New Jersey
it's
towns.
It's a French town.
Oh, God. That's like we were saying, this was in another podcast
yes.
we were talking about. In Jersey, there's so many towns. Even if you're from Jersey, like me, you don't know all the towns.
Well, he came to Jersey in 1813 after his brother was defeated and he was kicked off the throne.
Mm-hmm.
And he purchased 800 acres in Bordentown because of its proximity. It's directly between or like in the middle of the route between New York and Philadelphia. And he thought, oh, if I'm here, I'm going to be able to get news from France and Spain. I don't know what was going on in Bordentown at that time, but it was a hot spot.
Okay.
So he had a huge mansion. It's probably still there. Landscape grounds, a lot of parkland. And then people would come visit him, like John Adams, various royalty, Daniel Webster. And in general, the local people were impressed by him.
Okay.
They're like, because he's a deposed king. And I'm sure it was a little bit like a freak show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure Americans at the time were like, let's go hang out at the deposed king's house. He's got plenty of, you know, booze, there's ladies. I'm sure they weren't his actual friends.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
Right. But they were looking for a good time.
Yeah. So he has a tale. So he's one snowy afternoon, the ex-king of Spain was hunting alone in the woods near his house where he spotted some strange tracks on the ground. And they looked like the tracks of a two-footed donkey. I don't know if they thought that was a thing, but a two-footed donkey.
Okay.
So he's seeing two hooves, and then he noticed that one foot slightly larger than the other.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, the tracks just end.
All right.
As if the creature flew away. So the Joe stands there for a while looking at the tracks, trying to figure out what it might be. At that moment, he claims he heard a strange hissing noise.
Yeah.
And he turned around and found himself face to face with a large winged creature with a horse-like head and bird legs.
Oh, my God.
And astonished and frightened, he froze staring at the beast. Apparently the Beast was checking them out, too. They were there locked eyes for a little while.
Well, you know what you would say if you saw something like that? You'd be like Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what you would say.
You were right. Why aren't you working?
Yeah.
I would say.
What do you say? A long face, like a horse face and chicken legs.
And a harpy. That is exactly what she is. So astonished and frightened, they stared at each other.
I like Sarah Jessica Parker.
She's got another series. I'm like, who's watching this crap?
Divorce, it's called.
Divorce. I'm waiting for her last menopause. So then the creature hissed at Joe. I'm calling him Joe on her first name. First syllabus basis. Beat its wings and flew away. So he later reported the incident to a friend. And he was told that he had just had an encounter with the Jersey Devil.
That's right.
From the Pine Barrens.
Yeah.
That's not the description I understood of the Jersey Devil. Is that what you...
Yeah, that's a good Jersey Devil.
So it's Sarah Jessica Parker. It's the Jersey Devil.
Aww.
So he, he kept looking for the creature after that. He never found it again. And then finally, once things settled down, he eventually returned to Europe and got back together with his wife. Is the end of the story.
Okay.
But he had his report, historical report, is that he had an encounter with the Jersey Devil while out hunting one day.
And what year was that, do you know?
This was in 18... I didn't know the Jersey Devil, the tale of the Jersey Devil was this old. 1815, something like that.
1815?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I thought that the Jersey Devil was much later.
I did too, but apparently not.
Oh, I gotta look into that.
1813, he said, he was told that he had just seen the famous Jersey Devil... who had haunted the Pine Barrens.
Mm.
So,
great.
Yeah, that's interesting because I thought it was more recent as well. But there you have. You have a deposed king seeing the Jersey Devil.
Boy.
And then at the end, this goes back to his wife.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
That's the story. I need to get back to
this. I need to get back to my wife.
I don't know what's out there.
Yeah. In Jersey.
The Jersey girls.
Yeah. Jersey girls. So, what do you have?
With a Jersey girl. Bruce Springsteen has a song about Jersey girls.
He does?
It's a lovely ballad.
Is it a power ballad?
I'm in love with a Jersey girl.
And?
Dude, I'm not going to sing the whole
thing. No, what's the song about?
What? It's about nothing matters in this whole wide world when you're in love with a Jersey girl. You're going to go out to the boardwalk. take your baby out on a Saturday night.
That's wow.
You're going to go to the boardwalk and nothing matters when you're with her.
That's it? Okay.
Nothing matters in the whole wide world.
Except for when you're not with her.
Yeah.
Then we have issues. All right, so what do you have?
I have here Barnyard News.
Okay, Barnyard News is a segment where we report on animals in the barnyard, sometimes out of the barnyard.
Yeah. Well, this is from the Lincoln Zoo in Chicago.
Not the other Lincoln Zoo.
Very recently, they had a baby calf, a camel. A camel was born. A camel was born at the zoo.
A camel was born.
Unto the world.
Starring Liam Neeson.
And they named it Alexander Hamilton, after the Broadway musical.
Are you
Hamilton.
Kidding me? And not after the president?
Right.
Alexander Hamilton?
Yeah. After the hit Broadway musical Hamilton.
I mean, I guess except that Alexander Hamilton is not known as like a decent human or whatever.
Yeah. So that's why, because they wanted a little flash and...
They want to get snacks. Noticed.
Yes.
Come see our camel. Because it makes so much sense to have a camel in Chicago.
Alexander Hamilton. And the Hamilton creator and star, Lin-Manuel Miranda, seemed to appreciate the tribute, tweeting a surprise face and a camel emoji in response to the punny name.
And that's all they wanted from him.
Yes.
They just wanted that tweet.
Yes. And that little Hamilton is 4 feet tall and 61 pounds at
Jeez.
Birth.
Wow.
And was born May 18th. And is... It is the first successful offspring of his mother, Nissan, and her mate, Scooter.
Really? I mean, really? Scooter?
I know. It's like, she sounds like she could do much better than Scooter.
Yeah, I know. Nissan sounds very...
Very regal, very powerful.
Stately.
Stately is the word.
Scooter.
And Scooter.
Good luck to them. Good luck to Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
I think the thing is... Isn't there the book Freakonomics? They address names that parents give their children.
Yeah, trying to be cute.
The name of the person, you can tell by the year they were born how intelligent the parents were.
Yes, that's all it says.
Yeah,
it only says it's funny because people get judged by their name, but it's really a judgment on the parents, the people who named you.
Yeah,
I find it interesting. I wonder how many people, and there's probably evidence about this. How many people change their names?
Yeah.
Like, officially change their names because their parents were idiotic in their minds. And they just weren't down with it.
Right. Like the name Britney, for example, before Britney Spears, Britney was...
It was an upper-class name.
Upper-class name. And then after, if you were born after Britney Spears became famous, then mm-hmm. it's a very different
like
name.
A teen mom.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I know that there's always, people are always going back and forth about this, but yeah, it really does say something about your parents, which is why I don't have a problem when people change. Whatever people tell me their name is what they want to be called, that's what I'm going to go with. Mm-hmm. I don't care what your quote-unquote government name is. Just tell me how you want to be addressed, and we'll go with that. Because when I worked in the public school system, there are some children whose names, I'm sure they will change them. When they get older. Yeah. I don't think anyone wants to be called Hennessy. You know? In any case. Okay. Although I like the name, but people always will just think about the drink.
Yeah.
Right? So I have some penis news. Penis news is my segment where I report on dicks in the news.
That's what stories. She does, yep. Everybody.
So sharing the shaft. So this is an interesting one. This is a... And I couldn't believe this is from AskMen.com. Oh. So apparently a lot of fathers... are taking their young boy, prepubescent boys, to the doctor, worried that the child's penis is too small, or that their son has a micropen. I know. So these are children who are already starting to feel bad about their anatomy. Yeah. Uh-huh. But the point of it is that, so the fathers are really concerned. They're taking 11-year-olds to the doctor. Uh-huh. Be like, what's wrong with my son's tackle? What's going on? And the problem is, there's nothing wrong with the son. There's nothing wrong with the genitalia. It's generally children who are obese. And because they are obese, it looks smaller than it should be. It's kind of like, you know, if a short person stands next to a tall person, they seem even shorter. Yes. So doctors are letting people know, and if anyone out there is listening, do not take your son to the doctor and traumatize them about the size of his genitalia.
It's just
there's
the worst.
Nothing wrong. And also they were saying too, and this just tells you how little people know about anatomy. Your body changes. Yeah. These are still young boys.
Yeah.
Things have not gone where they are eventually going to go. Mm-hmm. But, and it's happening en masse. A lot of fathers are taking their sons. And the doctors are saying, there's nothing wrong with your son's genitalia, but he needs to eat less. Like, you need to be focusing on health and not on, you know, genitalia.
Yeah.
So bizarre. I feel so bad for these kids. That's the worst. If your parents take you to the hospital, think about when you're a girl and you first start developing.
Yeah.
If when you first started developing, it didn't look like, you know, a boob job and your mom was like, we're taking you to the doctor.
These are not coming in like I expected them to.
These don't look nice and round.
Yeah. How are you going to land a man?
Yeah. With these. And you're 13. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
So this is essentially what is happening. So this is Penis News, like a PSA. Mm-hmm. Do not traumatize your children. Just wait. Mm-hmm. And also, don't guys remember when they were young?
Yeah.
You know, like, it hasn't been that long,
right?
Don't you remember this stuff? It's so bizarre. So, yeah, there's basically, you know, the kids that are coming, they tend to be overweight, and the parents are overreacting to what's going on. So strange.
That is weird.
Yeah. AskMen.com. It must be a huge problem if it's on AskMen, because that's the most pedestrian of all sites. All right, what do you have?
I read a little bit about a study about women and their periods.
Okay. Now we're on the other side.
And actually, there are very few studies because...
men don't care?
No, yeah. It's actually about women in sports. They do a lot of research on men in sports and what men's bodies go through and... all of that, but there are very few studies for women and what they go through with their period, with female athletes.
I remember when we were growing up, having your period was, because I was really into athletics, I was like, why? Mm-hmm. I was so annoyed. Because I'm like, this will ruin the game. This will ruin everything.
Yeah.
Because when you're young and you're developing and you're getting your period, the hormonal effects sometimes can be very dramatic.
Yeah.
And if you have a big game that day, God forbid, a swim meet.
Oh my God, yeah.
Gymnastics.
Yeah.
It just throws everything off.
Yeah. It really does. But then when research is conducted on women who exercise, it's often limited. For example, women only are tested when they're at a specific phase in their menstrual cycle.
How do they know that?
Typically
like day three.
When the hormone levels are low.
Oh.
Throughout your monthly cycle.
These are some of the worst sports scientists ever. Shouldn't you be looking at the woman every day during her cycle?
Right, right. And then some studies only include women who take birth control. And then they completely ignore the possible impact of menstrual cycle on, at all. So they're only tested when they don't have their cycle.
Why? What is that going to tell us?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because there might be situations in which when you are having your period, it increases your performance.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And they, related to the topic, there are some businesses. Because,
you know, we like to stay tightly on topic on the show. We don't deviate from topic.
There is a business, actually, that lets women take certain days off according to their cycle.
Who are these people?
So if you have
a heavy
cycle and you want, during that time, you want to be at home, take those days off and then come back when you're feeling better, because they say your hormones, you become more productive on other days. So mm-hmm. take advantage of those days and do your work.
Yeah, because you get tired, mm-hmm. you're drained of energy sometimes. Like if you have severe cramps, which some mm-hmm. of us do, that's not an office day for you.
Yeah.
Like I think that's a great idea. I don't know why they haven't been doing this all along. Who wants someone to come in when they're doubled over in pain yeah. and angry?
You see, right. I think there was, I didn't watch the whole thing. There's some kind of video of a couple of guys. They put like a device to their abdomen.
Oh, to simulate menstrual cramps?
Yeah, and see how
they fall on the floor and cry.
Falling over. Ugh. They can't even get up.
No threshold for pain.
It's wrapped around their torso.
Uh-huh.
And so they're just like in the fetal position on a bed, like, oh my God.
Really? Yeah. Get over it, gentlemen. Act, you know, woman up.
Yeah. So, women are not being studied, and they're only being studied at certain times.
Lame. That's lame.
But that's one of the things they found out, that they need to include the entire month.
And not just women who don't have a period.
Yeah.
And not just women who have a period who are not having that period on those days. They need to think about the other. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then someone is like, now we're going to study you all the time.
Yeah. But it's just like, if you're your period, it's like, forget it. You're like,
we don't want you in the study.
Yeah. Get out.
Don't come in here. You're going to sully it.
Yeah.
With your periods. With your fluids and your hysteria. You're listening to Hey, You Know It with Jaquetta Sotmari and
Katie Kazmir.
We're telling you how it is and how it should be. So I have some tale/advice. So no real intro since it's a hybrid, I guess. But this is about a couple in Des Moines, Iowa. They are trying to sell their house. It's from 1873. It's a three-story Queen Anne home. It's weird. I haven't been in a three-story house since I was a little girl. A lot of my friends growing up who lived on farms had three-story houses. It's creepy.
It's like,
because if you're on the third floor and there's an attic, say you're in the attic, there's a lot of floor below you.
A lot of floor. And then the idea that people don't go up all the time because they don't want to take the stairs all the time. So all your activity is on one and two.
Yep. And who wants to go to the third floor? And it's going to be hot as balls up
there. Oh, yeah, it's hot.
So their house, they claim, it has old house character, two porches, glass sunroom, double lot, carriage house, picket fence, and three or four ghost spirits are included.
I like that.
So they said that we hear stomping feet and things flying off the shelf and people talking, but it's not haunted. So they're trying to sell this property. And apparently, I guess in Iowa, they have to, and we've talked about this before, they have to disclose material defect. And ghosts and spirits sometimes qualify under that disclosure. Yeah. So they say they disclose it as a stigmatized house.
Mm.
So it's the same thing if there was like a murder in your house or something like that. So how do you know if your house is haunted and what can you do about it? George Mathis, no relation to Johnny Mathis, praying mantis.
Johnny Mathis, praying mantis, our favorite insect in the world.
He's the co-founder and president of the National Society of Paranormal Investigation and Research, weighs in on the topic. So they're having a conversation about how do you know if your house is haunted, blah, 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 which is interesting. But the most amazing thing that I found out, and this guy is the president of the National Society of Paranormal Investigation and Research, and Inspire, actually it spells out.
Oh.
He said that real paranormal investigators don't charge. Yes. What would a paranormal investigator do for me and what is the cost? So this is if you think you have a ghost in your house. It says if they're a good paranormal investigator, they won't charge anything.
Oh, come on.
We certainly don't. Most people do it as a hobby. If someone tells you if they do it for a living and they want to charge you, they are going against an unwritten policy among paranormal groups to provide services at no charge. So they're kind of like clergy, I guess, in the same way. Like, if they're coming to your, not that they have the same, but you know what I mean? They provide a service.
Here's the thing, but it's not religion.
Oh, I agree. I agree. But I'm saying, like, you know how a clergy member will come to your house and bless your house?
Yeah, you know what? But a clergy member also will
take some all.
If you want to get married by a clergy member, you're paying.
True. So that was just the interesting thing I found. It says they have a database, and what they do is the first thing that they do when you say our house, it's like, our studio's haunted, help.
Yeah.
They're going to come in, not charge us, which is good because we don't have any money. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to match it up in their database to see if there are any other similar hauntings. So if there's a podcast studio somewhere else in the world that is haunted by a similar entity. And that helps them to figure out what's going on. They said they use all the equipment that they do on the television shows. But the guy, he has a science background. And he's saying no one really knows if this equipment can give you proof.
Oh, God.
He's not condemning the equipment. He's just saying there's no, 100% proof that the equipment, EVP, like all that kind of stuff, if it works or not. We think it works, but they're not sure.
Electric voice phenomena. Something.
And there's also EMF, electromagnetic field detection meters or something like that. They also use the cassette recorders, which is, I don't know where they're getting cassettes from. They're the last people on earth to use cassettes or ghost hunters.
Okay.
Like nobody else is using a cassette. And they pick up, they use 35 millimeter photography. Again, the last people on earth to be using old school cameras are the ghost hunters. And they use also thermal imaging and like a digital thermometer. So what these guys do is they promise you results of some kind within 2 weeks.
Okay.
So they're going to come into your house for free, match it up in their database, check everything out, and then they come to their own conclusions. That's pretty interesting. So they're saying real paranormal investigators, as far as they're concerned, don't charge for the service.
I think they should charge a little something.
I mean, you could give them a little gratuity. But maybe the idea is that maybe there are some unscrupulous paranormal investigators out there that are charging people crazy amounts of money.
Okay.
And not really able to provide them with because you can't say with 100% accuracy that you have a ghost or we've gotten rid of your ghost.
Yeah.
I guess is the thing. Well, interesting.
It is interesting.
Maybe that's why they have to have these TV shows.
Right.
To get paid.
Right.
Right.
And that's why they have their day jobs.
Yeah, they have day jobs. That's right. They're part time. He said they're doing it as a hobby.
Yeah.
Not to denigrate it, but as like that's really going to be difficult as a full time gig.
Yeah.
Is checking out people's houses. Because how often do you get called?
Yeah.
You know? So, anyways.
And you have to have a big territory. Like, you have to have, like, the Northeast.
I'm doing everything west of the Mississippi is mine.
Yeah. Right? That's what we should start, is the ghost busting sales and business development director. That's what I want to be.
Ghost busting sales and business developer. Can I do director. Marketing and advertising?
You could do marketing and advertising.
Jingles. I'll do jingles.
I will set up the territories within the U.S. and what are the hot locations
ghosts
that seem to be?
We'll be like, we want to put you in this area, but it's got a lot of ghosts. Can you handle it?
New Orleans is going to be its own territory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's going to be
Washington, D.C.
D.C., Boston.
Boston, of course.
New York.
Philadelphia, not so much. I don't know why. I feel like ghosts in Philadelphia, they don't have a problem with them.
Yeah.
Just laying low. Like, they're there, but it's not a problem.
Battle sites are going to be big.
Yeah.
See, I'm already working.
You're already working on it. And I'm thinking about jingles for some reason. We got a huge jingle department. We got 20 people working on jingles. I got a team. I got teams and teams.
I mean, one director and then 20 people on
20 people on, and we just do jingles.
Jingles, that's all. Jingle for each.
Yeah, and they'll be like, why do we need jingles? It's like, don't ask. Yeah. When you get your jingle, you'll know why. You'll know why. That's mostly what we do is jingles. But we're hiding under the umbrella of paranormal investigation, but really jingles. That's what we do. Okay. What do you have?
Ghosts. All right. I have this.
Build that into something.
Okay. Wait a minute. Where was it? A jingle.
No, I'm saying I'm going to sample it.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, that's what we could do. We could go into people's houses. We'll do the business marketing stuff. We'll get a territory.
All right.
We'll go in. We'll record. There's your jingle.
Oh, we remix the EVP that.
Yes.
From the haunting.
We remix it. And then you use that to fight the ghost. So when the ghosts come out, you just hold on. Drop that beat. And then, right. Then you play the jingle and they're like, forget it. We got it. We're out of here. We jingle them out.
There was, I read a short ghost story about these people who were like recording whenever they were recording. And they said on the count of three, you know, do the thing. And then they went, 1, 2, 3. And then they did their thing. And then when they played the thing back, they heard another voice say, 4.
Are you saying?
So it was 1, 2, 3, 4. So it was something else in the room.
I didn't know that. I would have liked it was like, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's like a dance ghost. 4. That's just like, that's
rude. That would
scare me. It's rude.
A rude ghost?
Huh? Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, why?
What else are you going to do?
I don't know.
As a ghost. That's
I don't know. 5, 6, 7, 8 would be mine. And shuffle. We'll change. And turn.
Okay. Okay. Here's an article. It's called Eye Contact May Make People More Resistant to Persuasion.
Really?
So we've all been taught from God when we were kids.
To look people in the eye. Yeah. People say that I look people in the eye too much. I don't know how that's possible. Where am I supposed to look? I'm going to look people in the shoulder. I'm going to look you right in the hip. That's what I'm going to do.
I find myself looking away a lot because I keep going on and on when I talk, and I just, like, I can't look at anyone anymore.
While you're talking?
Yeah.
You look away.
Yeah.
That's rich. She's bored herself.
Yeah. Because I'm staring people down too much.
Okay.
I'm making them scared.
Okay.
And then they look away. So I'm like, oh, I better stop looking away a little bit more.
But do you pivot away as you just demonstrated, or do you just look away?
Oh, yeah.
You guys can't see it.
Yeah, you didn't see it, but I just turned my chair, like...
Yes. Slowly away.
Anyway, so making eye contact has long been considered an effective way of drawing a listener in
mm-hmm.
and bringing him or her around to your point of view.
Okay.
But research shows eye contact may actually make people more resistant to persuasion, especially when they already disagree.
Oh. Well, then forget it. You got to change tactics. Now you bring the lies and the jingles.
Yeah. So... So if they already disagree with you and you're staring them down, then they're going to disagree with you even more.
No shit. Like you, okay, there's a difference between eye contact and like giving someone the eye and like trying to bear down on them. That's different.
Yeah, any skeptical listener, or they're less likely to change their mind.
I always look people in that because I want to see if people are bullshitting me.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, so... They did this eye tracking. They have eye tracking technology, and so they were tracking people's eyes.
What if you have a roving eye? Just one.
So they had participants and a speaker, and there were various controversial issues.
And okay.
They were really focused on the speaker's eyes during the whole time, the people who were listening. And they noticed that they were less receptive when the speaker's opinion was... different from their own, but when they agreed with the speaker's opinion.
They were with them?
Yeah.
I mean, is there not a part of kind of socialization in that? Because I was always told to look people directly in the eye no matter what. And when people disagree with me, I don't look away from them.
Mm-hmm.
I continue to look at them if we're having a normal conversation, right? I do. I notice I do it in class, and then it ends up with the teacher looking at me most of the time because everybody else is looking down
mm-hmm.
or not paying attention. So then it's just me out like an asshole, like following the teacher around the room, the teacher feeling trapped that they got to keep making eye contact with me. Or if the teacher's happy that someone is like, because I'm making eye contact, I'm nodding. You know what I mean? I'm letting them, because that's the way I was raised, right? You pay attention and you let someone know that you're with them. You don't look at your phone.
Right. So it just depends on the situation. So eye contact, everybody should learn how to look into people's eyes and speak.
I think people get freaked out.
Yeah. But the message getting through depends on the situation. So, parents may be, like they say to a politician or a parent, it may be helpful.
A politician or a parent?
Yeah, someone who's trying to tell somebody what to do.
Uh-huh, and they don't want to hear from it, like politicians and parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might, keep in mind that trying to maintain eye contact may backfire if you're trying to convince someone who has a different set of beliefs. So if you're...
Look away. Huh.
Eye contact is so primal, we think it probably goes along with a whole suit of subconscious psychological changes.
Well, you just keep an eye on somebody, make sure they're not going to get shady.
Yeah. Researchers are planning to look at whether eye contact may be associated with certain patterns of brain activity, the release of stress hormones... or the increase in heart rate during persuasion attempts. So
I know that I've been taking Bikram yoga classes in an attempt to be more chill.
Uh-huh.
See how that's working out. But there's
I was gonna say you have been so chill.
So chill the whole time. You know the pose in yoga where you lay on the floor, the corpse pose.
Yeah.
So there are some times you're in the class just at the end they're like you can close your eyes, but throughout when you're laying down they're like keep your eyes open, stay alert, because I've noticed that the moment you shut your eyes you're like,
yeah,
like I'm out of here.
Yeah.
You're checked out even if you are thinking that you're in it. Like, yeah. I'm doing Bikram. It's like 1,000 degrees in the room, sweating balls. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not exactly a place where you can just kick back and take a nap and relax. And the teacher was talking the whole time. But just closing the eyes, even for, like, 10 seconds, it's gone. So, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I think a lot of it has to do with socialization, though. If someone's saying stuff you don't like, you probably don't want to deal with them at all. If you can't get away from them, you're like, I'm not going to fucking look at you.
Right. And then you're also, when you're disagreeing with somebody, think about how your face is reacting to them. Like,
So maybe you're trying to be either to be respectful or hide your true feelings. Yeah. Except for me, because you know, my face just lights up when I'm like, I might as well have a billboard above my head because I think you're a dick. You know what I mean? Because my face just broad, like I'm not very good at that. I've been working harder.
I think to you're not okay.
pull faces. Yeah, but you're... Come on. We've been places where I pulled a face that's meant for you because there's some crap going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm that asshole.
I know.
Trying to crack people up like, hey! You know, visually kind of thing.
I remember one of the first times you did that.
I like to get other people in trouble. Don't ever be in a church with me. I'm that person.
We were in a class together, a writing class.
This must have been a while ago.
It was, when we first met, we were in a writing class together.
Sheesh.
And
we were young.
We were in a script writing class, people. So... Everyone has to, there's a lot of people and the classmates in the room and we all have to read our writings out loud.
There's some good stuff and some stuff that's not so good.
Yeah, but that's the part of it.
Yeah, we're it's workshops.
So it's okay. But somebody wrote something and they added the following week, like a pet squirrel, something like that, that would climb up and sit on people's shoulders and be like the friend in the group.
And so, did I not cotton to that at all?
Well, the thing was, also, I missed it. Like, I had, the week before they were writing their script.
Okay, and so you weren't aware of the addition.
And then suddenly it was, like, the same story, but the squirrel was there. And I was just like, where did the squirrel come from? So I'm confused. And then, listeners, Jaquetta, like, mimics a little squirrel going up her shoulder. And then, like, shakes her shoulder, like, and pets, like, this imaginary.
Wow. Subtle.
But it was just for me. And nobody else was watching. Everyone was looking intently at the scripts.
That's what I'm saying.
That's why Jaquetta and I were looking up at each other like, what's going on with the squirrel? She does this.
That's why I'm that asshole that you can't, like in a concert, if it's quiet, in church, in a lecture, I'm always looking around to be like, is anyone else not paying attention? Or will anyone look at me
and I'll do something? Yeah, we were the only ones that were like,
what's going on?
Squirrel.
The squirrel.
That's almost like, you know, the sidekick, like Scooby-Doo.
Oh,
you know, like.
Really. And it probably had no place in the script.
Oh, no, no, really. No,
there's nothing wrong with writing something like that in. But if it's like a Glengarry Glen Ross type of situation, all of a sudden, I'm going to put in a bunny.
Yeah.
How about that?
Because research groups show that everyone likes the bunny.
That everyone likes the bunny.
So we're just going to throw a bunny in there.
Sorry, I'm going to have to make a face. Just letting you know.
It was that kind of situation. Thrown it in there just to.
Fortuitous squirrel.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.
I once found it was on my cheek, and I pulled it. It was like a little hair.
A
blonde hair. And I was like, oh, this little blonde hair, it's a little bit long. And I pulled and pulled, and it was probably about 6 inches
long. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. It grew on the side of my face, but underneath my skin.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, and then like my skin flaked or it had a pimple or something.
And then you just pulled it out?
And it just came out and it was like this giant blonde hair from the middle of my face.
I think it's so weird. I have one blonde hair that grows on my right arm and I've had it since I was a little girl. And every once in a while I find I pluck it out, that shit comes right back.
One blonde hair.
Can you imagine if the whole arm was blonde? And I don't have a lot of hair.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that, like, I would see and be like, and it's stronger.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And longer than the other. Like, it's not like the rest of the hair. It's like a renegade, like, colonialism.
That's so funny. So it's on your arm.
It's on my arm.
And I have one dark hair that grows out of my chin.
Maybe we need to switch.
Yeah.
These hairs are in the wrong place. A switch to birth.
Yeah, right. It's like Freaky Friday. We've got each other's hair.
Freaky follicles.